Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. An exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Welcome back. We're on episode number
112. Oh my gosh.
Nice. They get better and better.
Well, it's an exciting day to start another episode of Modern Yogi Podcast. Where are we, Shama Sangeeta?
We are on chapter 13, text number 30.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And if you have any comments, questions, concerns, anything about the podcast, we also have an Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
At Modern Yogi Podcast.
And Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if this podcast has changed your life, we are offering a free, like a fundraiser.
What?
If you want modern yogi beanie or hat,
we are
accepting donations of $108 and we will send you a free modern yogi beanie or hat.
It's such a deal, right? $108 for one beanie is like, a steal if you think about it.
You're ruining my marketing pitch, okay?
Then explain
to
them.
It's all about like, if this podcast has touched your soul and changed your life and you want to help buy us new equipment and you would love a hat or beanie because your head's cold, then $108 please, thank you.
Okay, so it's almost like a reward for their donation to support
us. That's what I should have said.
Buying a beanie for $108.
So, I was playing devil's advocate. That makes more sense.
I should have said what you just said. Yeah, it's a reward for their donation to support us.
Yes, and where can they find the link to support us?
Ooh, at Modern Yoga Podcast.
The bio on the Instagram, you click on that link and then you see the GoFundMe right there.
I'm so used to parroting, like, at Modern Yoga Podcast, at Modern Yoga Podcast. I'm so used to parroting and parroting it. And I don't actually understand the question sometimes.
That's hilarious.
It's
okay.
It's on the link in bio on our Instagram.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Also, this was completely unscripted, as you can see.
Yes, but it went very well.
It
went chaotically beautiful.
Oh yeah. Love fantastic. All right. Quick recap. Who wants to touch base?
Not it.
Okay, fine. I really loved last episode because we talked about how Krishna's like, if you're not conversant in spiritual knowledge, that's okay.
If you're not what?
Conversant.
Conversant. What did you think I said?
She said conversant.
I didn't hear it.
Conversant?
I don't know. My ears are messed up.
I probably said conversant with an F. Conversant.
I just wanted to clarify.
Conversant in spiritual knowledge. Sometimes you begin worshiping Krishna upon hearing about Krishna from other people. Mm. And if we have a tendency to hear from people that have more knowledge than us, you know, different gurus, different mentors, but different people who have been on this path a little bit longer, right. Then we can also transcend the path of birth and death by listening to higher authorities.
Beautiful. Yeah, it was a nice, like the yin and yang, the two sides of we have to be able to spread and talk about it, but also receive and listen and hear.
Yeah.
And also one who can see Krishna in everything and knows that super soul within us, but also the spark that is us, our souls, both of those little sparks.
Yeah.
If we know that those two things never get destroyed, we actually understand the essence of bhakti yoga.
Yeah. And not only not destroyed, but they're equally in every living entity's heart.
Because that really creates equal vision. We've talked about that theme so much throughout the Gita. So it highlighted a little more that true equality is seeing on a soul level.
Yeah. And
super sweet.
That was it. All right. The invocation, please, ladies.
Om Agyanate Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Translation: I was born in the darkest ignorance and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them. All right, chapter 13, text number 30, Priyadarshini.
This is still Krishna speaking. One who can see that all activities are performed by the body, which is created of material nature, and sees that the self does nothing, actually sees.
Ooh, it almost sounds like she sells seashells by the seashore.
Yeah, I have no idea what you just said.
Okay, do you want me to read it again or you want me to tell you what I think it means?
No. Read it again and then tell us what you think it means.
All right. So one who can see that all activities are performed by the body, which is created of material nature and sees that the self does nothing, actually sees.
I love the way this is worded.
Still don't understand what you
got. I got you. Okay, so Prabhupada actually goes to explain it. He says, this body is made by material nature. Does that make sense so far?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Under the direction of the supersoul.
Wait, can you go back to the first line?
Yes.
We're still on the first line.
This body is made by material nature.
Is material nature my mommy and daddy?
Good question. No. Good question. I see. I'm sorry. I spoke too soon. You were thinking of the nuances.
I am a genius.
You are.
I'm just joking. Sorry, go ahead.
Material nature, like, meaning the three modes.
Everything that surrounds the soul.
So goodness, passion, ignorance, the percentages based on our karmic desires.
Yes.
Love that. Okay, yes? We covered that. Yeah.
So this body is made of that. Under the direction of the supersoul, under the direction of Krishna.
Krishna creates everything.
Yes. And whatever activities are going on in respect to one's bodies are not Krishna's doing. Wait, his doing. No, it are not. This our soul's doing.
So read the last part and whatever.
And whatever activities are going on in respect to one's body are not his doing.
Ooh, so Krishna is in our soul, but he is not conducting all the activities.
Well, actually, it's not saying his capital H. So I'm assuming it means it is not our soul's doing. And especially if you look at the purport, it says that if we understand that these activities are performed by the body and that we see that the self does nothing, the self meaning our soul.
Is self capitalized S or not capitalized?
It's not in either direction. So it's talking about our soul, not Krishna. Right.
Okay.
So it's saying whatever activities are going on in our bodies are not our doing, our soul's doing.
Our soul's doing. That helps clarify.
Got it. Does that make sense?
It's not
so whatever
our soul's
we
doing.
Do is not our soul's doing. But then who is doing it then?
I got you.
Yep.
So it says whatever one is supposed to do, meaning karmically, either for happiness or for distress, one is forced to do because of the bodily constitution.
Mm. So our body is doing it.
Yes.
Right. Because the self is outside of these bodily activities. It's kind of like the witness of it all. We're like, oh my gosh, what are they doing? They're self-destroying, or we're seeking enlightenment, good or bad. The self, our soul is observing also. Because remember, our soul doesn't have these material desires. Our soul is
eternality,
pure bliss, knowledge. And then Krishna's also the eternal witness and friend observing it all. But then we're thrashed around by the three modes, as Priya said. We have these propensities that when we're not seeking enlightenment, we might give in to our lower desires and accrue more karma. And based on those desires, get another body in the next life. But the soul has nothing to do with all of that.
Okay, so let's just take a mundane action, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say you're drinking celery juice, right? Okay.
Okay.
Our soul is not doing that. Our super soul is not doing that.
Yes.
Our body is doing that.
Yes.
Ding, 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 ding.
And okay, so that's what this verse means.
Yeah.
Okay, hi-o. All
right. Yeah, and our body is doing that because of our past desires. Mm-hmm. Because in your past life, you really wanted to have celery juice. So we're given a body that craves it. Like you're given a body in this lifetime that's like, oh, I feel like celery juice would be so tasty.
And then I wanted it. I desired it.
And then you go ahead and do it.
And then I was born on a celery farm in this lifetime.
Okay.
Because of my past life desire.
Yeah, totally.
It's interesting because we think we have so much freedom, but we're almost like, quote unquote, forced to do these because of our bodily constitution, meaning our desires that sometimes are beyond us. We're thrashed around by goodness, ignorance. Well, normally not so much by goodness, but
we're thrashed around by goodness. Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. I mean,
God, but I'm having such a good time.
But by passion, by ignorance. Goodness would be nicer, a step above. And then pure goodness to go beyond the modes is the goal.
Okay. Yeah. I think we nailed it. Yeah.
So Prabhupada says, unless Priya, you had something else to add to the I got you.
To the I got you.
Oh, because earlier
Keep going. It's good.
Okay, so the self, right, is outside all of these bodily activities. And as she said, the body is given according to our past desires. So to fulfill these desires, we're given a body that we can act accordingly. So if you really wanted celery juice, you're going to be born with a body that has a high propensity to ingest celery juice.
Nice.
And craves it and whatever. Anyway, so practically speaking, Prabhupada says the body is a machine designed by the Lord to fulfill our desires. Mm. So interesting, right?
Yeah. He then says, this transcendental vision of the living entity when developed, makes one separate from bodily activities.
Ooh, that's a great one.
Yeah? One who has such a vision is an actual seer. So basically, it's like once we're able to develop these qualities, because we read the Gita, because we put things into action, because we develop our relationship with Krishna, because of all these processes that we're talking about in the Bhagavad Gita, we're able to separate our bodily activities. Mm. And it no longer becomes, I have to have celery juice. Right? Mm-hmm. It becomes, oh, maybe Krishna wants some celery juice today.
Yes. And this is a great answer to if someone might question like, well, how do I get beyond these modes? If I've been given a body that is just going to be pulled in all directions by my senses. Well, no, you can go beyond that. It's kind of like ages ago, I talked about putting a little space between the stimulus and the response. So we're constantly throwing around stimuli in this world. Are we going to immediately act on it and respond? Or that's the goal of meditation is to widen the gap between the stimulus and our response. I'm not going to jump on something I want. I'm going to breathe, try to control myself, or in the heat of the moment, I'm not going to respond to someone out of anger. I'm going to use my higher intelligence and develop a little bit of space.
Yeah. And also I think Krishna is saying in this whole Bhagavad Gita, if we just offer everything to Krishna, right? Yeah. All of these desires, all of these things that we want to do, then our consciousness slowly changes.
Absolutely.
So those two things, you know, take 10 seconds, you know, let the stimulus and response have more of a space between them. And try to offer everything to Krishna, whether it's that, oh, I want ice cream. Okay, you know what? Maybe Krishna would enjoy some ice cream.
Yeah.
That changes things.
Connected
a little bit.
To Krishna.
That's why it's called Krishna consciousness.
That's right. Yeah.
Conscious of Krishna.
Very nice.
Very nice.
She's like, Krishna consciousness. Those S's really came out.
Yeah.
All right. Text
31.
Shamasangita.
All right. Krishna is continuing. Krishna says, when a sensible man ceases to see different identities due to different material bodies, and he sees how beings are expanded everywhere, he attains to the Brahman conception.
So maybe, what does that mean?
Maybe Brahman?
Let me try again. All right, Krishna says, when a sensible man ceases to see different identities due to different material bodies, and he sees how beings are expanded everywhere, he attains to the Brahman conception.
What is a little confusing is he's not saying, and he sees the Lord within their heart as the super soul. He's saying, sees how beings are expanded everywhere. What does that mean? Is that the same as saying, because the beginning, when he ceases to see different identities, okay, we see beyond the body and essentially we see the soul, but he doesn't say we see the soul. He says, and we see how beings are expanded everywhere.
I think he's subtly saying it like it's not just about looking at like you should be able to identify that any living entity is. Wait, what?
It explains in the purport. Right. Because when one can see, it's this process that we were describing how we get a body through our desire. Mm-hmm. So when we can see how how bodies are expanded because of our desires, because we're entrapped.
What do you mean expanded?
Because Prabhupada here says that when one can see that various bodies of living entities arise due to the different desires of the individual souls, and they don't actually belong to the soul itself, one actually sees. So it's basically saying...
Say it one more time slowly.
Yeah, so we're seeing the process for what it is. And that is when one can see that the various bodies of living entities arise due to the different desires of the individual soul and do not actually belong to the soul itself. Actually sees.
Okay.
So our individual soul trapped in this material body has different desires, the whole process we explained. So we can actually see that those desires are because of the material body, not the soul itself. And we can see that whole process unfolding. Ooh. Then we actually see, because Prabhupada says in the material conception of life, we might see someone's a human, someone's a dog, someone's a cat. This is material vision. It's not actually spiritual vision because this material differentiation is due to a material conception of life.
I totally get it. I have two examples.
Say it again.
Okay?
Yeah.
So one example is a dog.
Okay.
A dog does not want to be a dog.
Yeah.
His soul wants to be with Krishna, but because of his desires, he is a dog.
Mm.
Does that make sense? Like in a past life, maybe he was...
He had a desire for belly rubs. Okay. Let's go with it. Go with it.
Sure, I'll go with that. But I feel like it's not the most practical way.
It's totally, totally it's a totally. Desire. Humans can have desires for belly rubs too.
The dog could have been a cat in a previous life.
Also desiring belly rubs.
So I don't know. This is getting off tangent. Okay, yeah.
Go with it.
So a dog, right? Got to that body because of a particular desire that it had in its previous body. That particular desire could have been a belly rub. Okay. Now let's say that dog was a fish in its previous life.
Okay.
And it observed in a household that the dog was getting more love, attention, or whatever. And therefore it wanted the belly rubs.
Yes.
That the dog.
You made it work. Yeah.
She did make it work.
Were you going to originally say this? Because you made it work perfectly.
She told me to make it work.
Yeah. So the goldfish that was in the house saw that the dog was getting belly rubs and it was like, I wish I could get a belly rub.
Right.
And so then that fish became a dog and its next
because
life.
That's the desire it had, right? But ultimately his soul or her soul actually wants to be with Krishna, because at the end of the day, all we really want is to never have to suffer, never have to die or get sickness or all of these miseries of this material world. And that's the real identity of that dog. But because it was entangled in this material world and it was in a household where the dog was getting more love and
belly
more
rubs.
I was going to say it. Nice. And more belly rubs, then that conditioning got that soul to desire those belly rubs and desire that body in particular, right? And now in a human analogy, we can talk about like a human that, like me, for example, I desire to...
Belly rubs.
No.
Shama, you need to stop it now.
Did you visualize that a little bit? Okay, sorry. Because Priya sometimes does desire belly rubs.
What
do you desire? Go ahead.
I don't know what you're talking about. Okay, anyways.
It's supposed to be just between us.
I'm just kidding. That's our private moments together.
That's hilarious.
Thank you.
So good.
She went with it deeper than you thought.
That was good. That was so good. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. Anyways.
You derailed her completely.
No. As a human, you
as
desire.
A human. God.
I'm just thinking belly rubs.
But we conditioned me. Anyways, I desire, for example, to binge Netflix.
Okay.
Right? That's not actually my soul's purpose.
Right.
It's nothing at all. But why? Because it brings me momentary happiness or whatever it is. It's like a temporary material influence that does not go along with my actual desire.
Right.
So I think,
totally.
And the danger with that, right? It's like, okay, so I like binging Netflix too, right? And there's this one particular show about this like really rich real estate agent who lives in Paris, right? No, I'm going somewhere with this. Okay.
I'm following.
Guys,
I'm following.
Guys. I'm a genius. Okay. Anyway, and this real estate agent lives in Paris, showcases luxury properties. Okay. And the more I binge this, the more it creeps up a little inner desire.
You're like the fish.
Yes.
Wanting the belly rub.
And what is the desire? What is the desire? That
desire is like, ooh, wouldn't it be nice to have that life?
To have a luxury.
Right? And it creates an impression or some scar where it's like, oh, my soul is having a desire. And remember, Krishna wants us to fulfill our desires here, right? Because if we still have desires here in this material world, we cannot approach Krishna.
So then that just builds up as karma for your next life.
Hi-oh!
Shama, that was actually
that
very
was
good.
So good.
That was very good.
And then I connected it to the fish.
And hi-oh! So that's teamwork. Really good too. Yeah.
Thanks.
You made it work.
But you basically just gave this perfect example of how desires creep in and you connected it to some scars or impressions, which were so impressionable.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to be so careful in this world because we can't think we're beyond getting influenced in positive or negative ways. We can't just be like, I'm so strong and so solid. We always have to be careful with who we surround ourselves with, what we intake. Mm-hmm. Impressions are made so strongly. And there's further and further like steps to degrade ourselves deeper and deeper into impressions we're going to consume, you know? So we have to elevate ourselves and what we take in.
Yeah. And you know what kind of scares me about like, and I'm guilty of this, I'm not going to lie, but like what Instagram culture and TikTok culture is that we are consuming impressions at a rapidly fast rate, right? If you think about people in the early 1900s, it's like they consume so much information to last them a whole lifetime. Whereas we consume the same amount of information in 2024 that in one day that someone in the early 1900s would consume in their entire life, right? Yeah. So imagine the amount of impressions that they're getting, right, back in the day. And look at our own activity when we're just scrolling, impression, mm-hmm. right? And we see, oh, someone's having a ice cream sundae. Oh, someone's vacationing in Paris. Oh, someone's doing this. It's creating these subconscious desires, right? Yeah. They're like, oh man, I wish I had that. I wish I was eating that. I wish I was doing that right now. I wish mm-hmm. I was, you know what I mean? And so the rate at which we're consuming these impressions is actually really bad for us.
Yeah.
Because it's creating more and more desires and we're just going to be in the rat race over and over again.
And no wonder anxiety is an all-time high. I mean, we're consuming, as you say, way too much and we're disconnected from what really grounds us. That's mm-hmm. why when I chant, I love to go to this park close to my house and I just take off my socks and I put my feet in the grass. I close my eyes. I feel the warm sun. And then I chant and it's just like a moment to everything stops and you need that stillness every single day to just disconnect.
Yeah. Also, another thing I was thinking about was like you were saying this idea of impressions and mm-hmm. how we are susceptible from other people's or like, you know, Instagram, TikTok, this, that, all these things we're seeing other people experience. But I was just thinking about the fact that like even I get a desire or an impression from something that I've experienced. Like I might be having a conversation. This just came up. Like I was having a conversation about museums or something. And then I remember that I went to a museum in Switzerland. Mm. And then I remember that when I was in the museum in Switzerland, I saw this notebook that I really liked. And then I went to my phone and I found a picture of this notebook that I really want. And I said, oh, you know what? Let me look it up on Amazon. And then connections. And what it made me think, and this is my extreme mentality, right? Which I don't want to be extreme, but like my brain went to, and this is why at the end of the day, if we want to be good devotees, we have to just only do Krishna conscious activities because it'll bring it back to Krishna.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or you could at least Krishnaize it, you know, because like more and more on my Instagram, you know, the more like it's the algorithm that whatever you click, it'll show you more of that. So whenever like, you know, like if you go to search something, you have the explore page. I tried to click things that are like kirtans or like things that I know I want to see more of. So at least I tried to be a little intentional with, at least if I'm going to be on my phone, let me see something spiritual there. You can't totally control it, but you can try a little. Ooh,
this is good. Okay, so I have homework for all of our listeners. Okay, we're going to do exactly what Shalmi just did.
Oh, I love that.
If you have an addiction to some sort of social media platform, you're going to go right now and then type in like 5 Krishna conscious words right into the algorithm, right? And
what
then start,
are the examples?
Right, like kirtan.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna kirtan. Kirtan. Bhagavad Gita quotes,
yes.
Right?
Ooh. Yes.
Prabhupada. Just Prabhupada.
Prabhupada, you know, like, and just... like mm-hmm. reconfigure your algorithm.
I love
and
that.
And then start interacting, likes, hearts, comments, right? Mm-hmm. And then so your feed can be more Krishna conscious.
Yeah, because it'll give you more of what you click on. It's like the classic, like the jokes, like the girlfriend will look at the search bar of the boyfriend and it'll be filled with like girls working out. It's like, and the guy's like, I don't know how that got there. I have no idea how that popped up on my page.
Yeah.
So it's like you get more of what you click on. So that's great homework to assign.
It's very
great
nice. Homework. I like it. I like it. But I was talking about, like, what about like real life stuff? Like,
this
example. Is my extremist, okay? Mm-hmm. I don't want to be this way and you tell me what you think. But then I was thinking, dang, I mean... I don't know if that's a good word to say. Anyways,
dang, D-A-N-G.
Yes, actually what I said.
Okay, perfect, great.
Cool. You can, anyways. So me traveling to Europe,
okay.
If it doesn't have a Krishna conscious purpose, is it bad?
Oof.
Like it went, I went extreme. You know what I mean? Where it's like, because I went to that museum and I thought about that thing that I wanted to buy in the museum gift shop. And then I thought about, oh, let me look it up in the Amazon. And then my mind is collecting all these maybe things that I want. And you know, honestly, what happened was I looked at the notebook and I saw that it was like $20. And I said, you know what? I don't need this in my life. And I moved on, whatever. But it doesn't change the fact that it definitely created an impression or a desire in my mind. And that's what makes me kind of go into, well, then it almost feels like that temple devotee environment, that temple devotee lifestyle is like the only way to live if you want to make progress in Krishna consciousness when you're there. I'm not saying that to do it now. I'm saying like, that's what we should strive for.
Yeah, but you can also make your traveling more Krishna conscious. Right. If you're chanting throughout the city, right? If you're going to the temple in that new city, or if you're eating prasad in that new city, or like offering prasad, or like sometimes actually people, like some of my mom's friends, they take their little laddu gopal, like Krishna deity, like with them, and then show Krishna all of the sights of the place too.
Like, that's so cute. So,
that's really cute.
I mean, there's ways to Krishna eyes wherever you are and whatever you're doing.
And in addition to that, because I think absolutely you can Krishna eyes anything. And in addition, if you're going to be talking about this knowledge and trying to spread it, the more cultured you are, the more you've traveled, the more you know about different philosophers and thinkers and scientists of the world, the more you can bridge gaps to people. Because think, if you've lived only a sheltered life of, I don't know anything in the what's the world out there, when you go to talk to people, how can you relate to them? Like, that's one thing my spiritual master said, I'm very human, you know? Mm-hmm. He could connect to anybody in such a beautiful way. And I don't think he would go traveling for his own pleasure of it, but because he had so many experiences in his life before of traveling and different things, and he traveled then after becoming a sannyasi for Krishna consciousness, he was able to connect to so many people on a human level, emotionally connect to them with wherever they're at. So I think having a very broad view helps.
Mm, for sure.
I love that. Anything else on text number 31?
I think just maybe there's the last sentence, if we want to kind of wrap it up.
Yeah.
But says, when one can see this, meaning understanding the difference between our soul's actions and our body's actions, right?
Right. Because it's like we were saying, the soul doesn't have desires. It's only when the soul comes in contact with this material nature and then with this body that it starts having those desires. But it doesn't inherently, our soul doesn't inherently have desires.
Our soul's inherent desire is to be happy with Krishna.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Correct. Totally.
Yeah. So when one can see this, one attains a spiritual vision, thus being freed from differentiations like man, animal, big, low, etc. One becomes purified in his consciousness and able to develop Krishna consciousness in their spiritual identity.
Nice.
And the final sentence connects it to the next verse.
Go for it.
How he then sees things will be explained in the next verse.
Hey-o. All right. Text number 32, Shyamali.
Those with the vision of eternity can see that the imperishable soul is transcendental, eternal, and beyond the modes of nature. Despite contact with the material body, O Arjuna, the soul neither does anything nor is entangled.
One more time, Shyamali.
Okay. Those with the vision of eternity can see that the imperishable soul is transcendental, eternal, and beyond the modes of nature. Despite contact with the material body, O Arjuna, the soul neither does anything nor is entangled. So exactly what we said. The soul doesn't desire in and of itself.
Go ahead. Also, it's the opposite of YOLO. It's literally the opposite of YOLO. If you can actually see that, like, this is not your only life, and you might have many more, and you've had many previous ones, if you can understand the concept of eternity, then you can realize, wait, what kind of eternity do I want to live?
Yeah. There's this one meme that I said that was like the opposite of YOLO is YOLABOT. It's YOLABOT. You only live a bunch of times.
YOLABOT.
Yeah.
That's pretty silly.
And so essentially, like, if you understand that our soul is Satchitananda, right?
Yeah.
And it is opposite. It's not anything to do with the material body. Then it's never entangled with anything the body does.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool. Anything else?
Text 33.
All right. Yeah. Priyadarshini.
Oh. The sky, due to its subtle nature, does not mix with anything, although it is all-pervading. Similarly, the soul situated in Brahman vision does not mix with the body, though situated in that body.
I have no idea what you just said.
Okay, it's just a visual.
Okay, do it again. Yeah.
The sky, due to its subtle nature, does not mix with anything, although it's all-pervading. Similarly, the soul is situated in Brahman vision does not mix with the body, though situated in that body.
Oh, okay. Makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
So I just wasn't listening the first time.
So basically the living entity, even though it's situated in different bodies, it's aloof from them due to his subtle nature.
Yeah. It's just like, it makes sense visually, right?
Yeah. And it's interesting. Prabhupada says it's impossible to see with material eyes how the living entity is outside of the destruction of the material body. So once we pass away and this body, we no longer are inside this body, our true selves. We can't see that with our material eyes. So no one in science, Prabhupada writes, can ascertain this because you can't actually see the soul with your naked eye. Mm. It's something that there is now actually lots of bodies of study that are starting to analyze consciousness and how we're something so much more than this bag of bones that we carry around.
The God particle.
The God particle. Can you say more? What is that?
I mean, that's just what they call the, like, sort of why we live.
Right.
They don't have an explanation. They don't believe in God. So they have to call it something.
The God particle. Right. So it's interesting because you can't actually see the soul with your naked eye. So Prabhupada even says once the soul leaves, there's no way to analyze it scientifically. Mm. But they're trying. They're trying.
I mean, yeah. They can't really even analyze it even when we're alive.
Right?
Like there's no way. I mean, it's also
there's
very small.
Of
Do you remember
it.
How small the soul is? It's like a
a
fraction
like
of a hair.
Like 1/100th of the size of a tip of a hair.
Dude, like that was one. Like you whipped that out.
It's just random
You're
facts.
A genius.
She's a genius.
When you guys say it, it feels mean, okay?
I meant it.
Wait, I meant it too. We looked at each other, we're like, well, it makes sense.
I'm joking. That's hilarious.
That's funny.
Random facts.
All right.
Text
well,
34. Shama Sangeeta.
All right. Krishna is saying, O son of Bharata, Arjuna, as the sun alone illuminates all this universe, so does the living entity, one within the body, illuminate the entire body by consciousness.
Okay.
Aww, that's really sweet. Also a really beautiful visual.
Yeah. So basically, Prabhupada says there's so many different theories regarding consciousness, but here in the Bhagavad Gita, we use the example of the sun and sunshine that was given. So as the sun is situated in one place, it illuminates the whole universe. So a small particle of the spirit soul, although it's situated in the heart of this body, it's illuminating the whole body by consciousness. Mm-hmm. So thus consciousness is the proof of the presence of the soul, as sunshine or light is the proof of the presence of sun.
Yeah. Aww. So sweet.
Yeah, we always use that analogy where it's like when you go to a funeral, you see a body and it's like, oh, can't believe this person is gone. But like what is actually gone? It's like the soul that has left because the soul, according to this, was illuminating the entire body by consciousness.
Exactly, exactly. So when the soul is present in the body, consciousness spreads all over the body. But like you said, Shama, as soon as the soul passes from the body, there's no more consciousness. Mm-hmm. And anyone who's experienced seeing a dead body, it's so evident.
Very
it brings
evident.
This philosophy so much to life.
Yeah.
That's so, real. Yeah. Wow. Consciousness, it says, is not a product of the combinations of matter, but it is a symptom of the living entity.
Yeah.
Say it again.
Consciousness is not a product of the combinations of matter, but it is a symptom of the living
Makes
entity.
Sense. You can't really make consciousness out of materials found in this world.
Totally. Ooh, say that point again. That's a very important one.
Yeah, you can't make consciousness. Is that what I said?
Yeah.
You can't make consciousness out of materials made out of in this world.
Exactly. Ooh. Exactly.
Like, that's a divine spark that's coming and making everything work.
So you're saying I can't make a human soul?
No.
You can't. I mean,
you see what I do on the weekends?
I drink celery juice.
I drink so much celery juice. Ask for belly rubs.
When you ask, I had a pause because women and men make souls, but they don't make the soul. The soul comes from Krishna and then it goes into the fetus. Mm-hmm.
But we are not making the soul.
Right.
No.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. That's why I hesitated for a second. I was like, wait, whoop. No,
right, because even whenever through as science advances, they still use the building blocks that have already been created. They have never created a soul or created
a human being out of nothing.
Exactly, exactly.
Or out of like metals and other random scientific items.
Right,
but,
right.
Okay, I have a question. But if we were to create a soul, how would we make one?
I got you.
Yeah.
Sugar. Spice and everything nice.
And maybe a little dash of Satchitananda.
Boom, soul.
Boom. I like that for you. That was good.
You know what I really like? This is the use of like in the last two verses, the use of like, what is it called? Similes?
Oh.
Similes is okay. Just like.
Say more.
The poetry of it, right? It's like comparing to the sky and also to the sunshine.
Mm-hmm. You're a poet and a genius. Because that's beautiful.
I try
it's
my best.
True.
Yeah. She can't take a compliment. She just laughs.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, but it's true. The sun, the sky.
Yeah, I just like that. I think like Krishna is trying to like he's really emphasizing this point, and it's just like beautifully done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Prabhupada wraps up the purport by saying the super soul, which is situated in all bodies as the friend of the individual soul, is conscious of all bodies. And that's the difference between supreme consciousness and individual consciousness. Because our soul, I'm not aware of everyone else's soul. I might be aware of it intellectually, but I'm not actually there.
Yeah, for sure. It's like when I was a young kid and I was playing with my Barbies and I thought to myself, if I'm controlling their lives, who's controlling mine? And until then, I really thought the world was all through my perspective, right? Like as a kid, you really think everything is from your eyes, about you, for you. Like it's very egocentric because that's kid's nature.
Yeah.
So.
But even that, you having that beautiful thought at that such a young age is also very karmic. Like you were like asking these really big questions in a previous life, and now you're playing with Barbies asking still the big questions, you know? Like it's like remember, you leave off, like you pick up where you leave off in your spiritual journey, right? So even you asking this question about your Barbies, like if I'm controlling the Barbies, who's controlling me, right? It's like a testament to like the work that you've put in lifetime after lifetime. Yeah. Don't screw it up this lifetime. Okay.
No pressure. Yeah. Nice. Well, ladies, are we about to begin the last text of this chapter?
We are. Who's reading? Is it?
I think Shyamali.
Oh. Shyamali.
Is it?
Yeah, she just read.
Oh, yeah. It's me.
Shyamali.
Okay. Shyamali.
Text 35.
Okay. Those who see with the eyes of knowledge the difference between the body and the knower of the body, and can also understand the process of liberation from bondage in material nature, attain to the supreme goal.
Oh God, one more time.
Those who see with the eyes of knowledge the difference between the body and the knower of the body, and can also understand the process of liberation from bondage in material nature, attain to the supreme goal.
Okay.
This is basically a summary of everything we've read thus far.
So the body and the knower of the body. Who again is the knower of the body?
The soul.
Is it the soul or the super soul? It's the soul, right? The knower of the body.
The knower of the body.
The knower of the body is the soul or the super soul? The soul, right?
The knower of the body.
We forgot.
Oh my God, we did this so many times.
Because it could technically be like, okay.
I feel like it's got to be Krishna because he's the knower, but then it could be the soul.
It could be the soul.
No. It is
the soul. I think Shama.
Yeah.
Shama, you're instructing us now.
The knower is the soul.
Shama.
Yes. Right?
Yes.
Okay. I believe. Okay.
So the body, the owner of the body is
the
soul.
Confirm that.
Yeah, because you know what? Krishna. It starts off in the purport. You're right, Shama, because, okay, the purport of this 13th chapter is that one should know the distinction between the body, comma, the owner of the body, comma, which is the soul, and the super soul. Krishna. So the super soul is another category. And one should recognize the process of liberation as described in verse 8 through 12. Then one can go to the supreme destination. Mm. Boom. Mm.
Mm. So wait, again, quiz.
Yes. So the body.
The difference between the body and the knower of the body. The knower of the body is?
The soul.
Yes.
The soul. Okay, and in the purport, they say the owner of the body. Yeah. The owner of the body is
the soul.
Interesting. We just switch between knower and owner.
Okay.
Cool.
Okay.
We'll take it.
Well done.
And then the rest of the purport continues to say that we need to hear from self-realized souls, a spiritual master. That's the first stepping stone of enlightenment. Yes. Shama.
Ooh, one verse, I mean sentence that I highlighted.
Oh, tell us.
Years ago. A faithful person should at first have some good association to hear of God and thus gradually become enlightened. Mm. And even like me coming to Christian consciousness, hearing from my mentor, but even you guys growing up, hearing from your parents about the glories of Krishna, that also just influences you, right?
Totally. I like that you read that sentence because it actually highlights that it takes a leap of faith to even start the journey. It doesn't mean that our whole lives we only need to have blind faith, because through this process, it'll become deeper and deeper in our hearts to where we're like, wow, it doesn't just take blind faith, but it takes an initial little leap of faith to even give it a try. Let me start hearing by those who are enlightened, by those who are ahead of me.
But, and even before that, just having association of people who are like, before the spiritual master, just having association of people who are wanting to talk about Krishna and wanting to learn about Krishna, that like gets you a little bit closer, one step at a time.
Exactly. And these teachers ahead of us can help us get freed from this material conception of life. And that's like in the Bhagavad Gita, the biggest thing, we find Krishna instructing Arjuna to free him from the material conception. So it's teacher, student. We need a teacher. We need guides. We need friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even doing this podcast with you ladies, like it just hearing it afterwards, like after we record an episode and I'm in my car and I'm just listening to our voices, I'm like, huh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Okay. It confirms my faith a little bit more,
I
you
love
know?
That.
And it's really important just to be hearing these things. And if you listen to the podcast or you listen to a different guru or a different, like whatever it is, whatever actually just like sets your soul on fire and brings you more faith, that is the most beautiful thing you can do for your journey.
Totally. Well, ladies, should we break down one sentence at a time, the last paragraph?
Yeah.
This last paragraph in this final text of chapter 13 is like a big epic summary of all of chapter 13. Mm-hmm. We're going to read one sentence at a time, just boom, boom, boom. So, turn your listening ears on. Priyadarshini.
One can understand that this body is matter.
It's a semicolon. It's confusing.
It wasn't a semicolon. I just didn't know if I read it correctly. Let me try that again.
Okay. That's great.
One can understand that this body is matter. It can be analyzed with its 24 elements.
The body is the gross manifestation.
Meaning like a gross, meaning tangible.
Tangible.
Yeah, and
not like ew.
Not like ew. Tangible versus like subtle. Mm-hmm. Because the next line, and the subtle manifestation is the mind and psychological effects.
Ooh. Mm. And the symptoms of life are the interaction of these features.
Ooh, well, which the features? Gross and subtle, right? We talked about that. Yes, yes.
Very good, very good. But over and above this, there is the soul. And there is also the super soul.
The soul and the super soul are two.
This material world is working by the conjunction of the soul and the 24 material elements.
Mm.
One who can see the constitution of the whole material manifestation as this combination of the soul and the material elements, and can also see the situation of the supreme soul, becomes eligible for transfer to the spiritual world.
Wow. So basically you can see everything for what it is, the breakdown of the elements, how they interact, what's the goal. Nice.
Also, it seems like it's saying that the conjunction of the soul and the 24 elements means the soul and the 24 elements make up our bodies.
Right, right. These things are meant for contemplation and for realization. And one should have a complete understanding of this chapter with the help of the spiritual master or of the modern yogi podcast, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita.
That ends the Bhaktivedanta purport for the 13th chapter of a Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of nature, the enjoyer, and consciousness.
Hey,
you read that so fast, I didn't catch it. Like the first 10 seconds of it. Let's do it one more time.
Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 13th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of the nature, the enjoyer, and consciousness.
Haribo! Beautiful. Wow.
That was a great summary. That last paragraph was
great.
Like,
paragraph.
I feel like I could read it again. So if you're listening and that's not enough, just rewind, hear that last little section. It's a great summary and you need to understand those things and have it ingrained and contemplate it, reflect it, as we will do here in this table.
Yeah. Any final notes on chapter 13, ladies? This was a hard, like if you read it by yourself, sometimes it could be like really hard, a little tedious, redundant, but it's really powerful. If you understand the concepts, it's very powerful.
Because if you break it down, I think that's what makes it more interesting, right? When you take each word that you don't understand and you ask questions and you figure it out, that's when it's like,
it's all the building blocks of everything, the material and the spiritual, matter and spirit. And then we look around and we can see the building blocks of everything in play. I'll look at your bodies. Oh, I see the 24 elements that work together. I see their souls. I look in the material nature and I see everything unfolding perfectly in Krishna's creation, thanks to the breakdown of this chapter.
Yeah, I can see how you have a super soul inside of you and a soul inside of you. And those two will be there forever, will not be destroyed.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
Mm.
Haribo.
All right, bowl.
Did you say those two will be forever in you?
Yeah. I mean, forever. forever in you, your soul, body. You know? You know what I'm trying to say.
I know what you're trying to say, but I want to clarify that there will only be forever together. Because the body will change.
The forever together and the body will change. Sometimes you'll be a goldfish. Sometimes you'll be a dog. Sometimes
you'll be Shama Sangeeta.
There you go. Yeah.
There will be soul and super soul together forever.
Yes.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Aww, like best friends.
So cute. We're the best friends that anyone could have.
Oh, I was talking about the soul and the super soul, but also us.
Soul and super soul. So I was making that song. Okay. And also us.
Yeah.
Okay, anyways. We need to end.
All right, please join us next time as we start chapter 14, The Three Modes of Material Nature.
Ooh. See you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Hello, beautiful souls. If you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long-lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.